We're certainly grateful for the presence of all who are here again this evening. The lesson this evening is going to be a rather simple lesson. We're basically going to look at a total of 10 different passages of Scripture. Most of the passages will be relatively short because they'll be taken from the wisdom literature. So you may want to be turning in your Old Testament to the book of Proverbs. 7 of the 8 passages of Scripture will be from the book of Proverbs, the next from the book of Ecclesiastes. We'll spend just a moment or two's time in Matthew and James as well. But we want to be discussing the subject of the temper, and specifically what the Bible has to say about the need for and the benefits of controlling an individual's temper. The reason why, and it's interesting that it is the case that so much concerning the temper is to be found in the wisdom literature, is because the wisdom literature is eminently practical. There is much sound advice, and it can be construed as advice. In fact, when you look at the book of Proverbs, though sin is discussed and the various vices of men are referred to from time to time in the passage as sinful, fact is the great emphasis and the thrust of those things is the lack of wisdom of an individual who engages in certain activities. That is, it is something that is self-destructive, and certainly that is the case with anger. We want to emphasize, and Matthew 5 will do that for us in a few moments' time, that anger is sin, and anger endangers an individual's soul. But it is also extremely destructive as we seek to live for God, to live among those of like precious faith. The sin of anger is something that can be extremely destructive in a congregation. There are, for example, in some situations or circumstances, congregations that exist that do not have men who are qualified to serve as elders, and as such, normally in situations like that, as a matter of expediency, men get together from time to time, month to month, perhaps to have a business meeting so that they can take care of the affairs of the congregation. And I know personally of circumstances and situations to where such meetings have erupted into actual fist fights. There was a situation in Tucumcari, New Mexico, to where the preacher there in that or at that congregation, as he was standing for truth against institutionalism back in the late 50s, to where he was challenged to a fight on the steps of the church building because of what he taught as an individual lost his temper in the midst of controversy. While fisticuffs perhaps are not the norm in such situations, it is often the case that inflamed voices and passions, anger and strife as a result of that anger has caused a great deal of damage among God's people. And so the idea of controlling one's temper is something that is extremely important. It has practical applications, of course, not only among individual brethren as we come together for the purpose of worship and working together as a church, but it also has very important applications in our personal lives, whether it be with regard to our family, our friends, in the workplace, even among strangers. Many of us have heard the phrase road rage. It is becoming fairly common to hear of road rage, where one individual cuts another off on the highway, maybe intentionally, maybe not, and that leads to almost kind of a bumper car mentality on the freeway, or smash them up, and there have even been guns that have been pulled in situations like. It's just amazing how people can so quickly and violently lose their tempers in circumstances such as that. And even as Christians, I can see from time to time we deal with the issues of anger. It's not every individual who has a quick trigger on his temper, but some of us certainly have a problem with it, and the Bible has much to say on the subject. And as you'll note up on the board, we are told that God repeatedly condemns the one who's quick to anger. And we want to note that and look at the importance of allowing reason and allowing humility, allowing gentility and kindness to have an upper hand rather than wrath and anger. We're going to look at a couple of passages that I think will be beneficial to us along those lines. The first of those passages, again, in the book of Proverbs is found in the 14th chapter in the 29th verse. And again, this is a wise man giving sage advice Of course, the general premise and context of the book of Proverbs is that of a father giving advice to his son. And it's interesting how often the advice surrounds both the need for an individual to control himself and the need for an individual to avoid those who do not exhibit said control. We'll look at both of those things in the lesson this evening. But the text from Proverbs 14:29 says that he who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly. You'll notice the two contrasting statements that are made there. One concerning being slow to wrath, and the other concerning being impulsive. And indeed, a quick trigger, an inability to control the temper, is characteristic of an individual who is impulsive. The point that is made here in this particular text, that one who is slow to wrath, one who is able to control himself, because he has a rein on his emotions, because he can think clearly, he learns from each and every occasion or circumstance where provocation comes. And that will make him a better person. If you are in a situation where you are provoked for whatever reason, and there are many reasons that might provoke a man, but you're in a situation where that happens and you lose your temper, you are in fact lashing out, you are unreasoning in that particular circumstance, you've learned nothing. And the next time the same provocation comes, you're likely to make that same mistake. But if you have the ability to control yourself, you can learn from such circumstances and occasions. That person is the one who has great understanding and is contrasted to the fool, the one who is exalting folly, who is impulsive. The next text, again in Proverbs chapter 29, this time in verse 22, we are told that an angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgression. So here we find again the word anger used, the idea of being furious. So we're talking about one who is not merely, again, provoked. And by the way, as we talk about this, as we'll see in just a few moments, it is possible for an individual to be angry without sinning. Now someone says, okay, tell me how that can happen, or tell me what circumstances I can be angry, and give me some liberty here, but that's not the point at all. The point is that provocation does beset each of us. And because of the nature of man, such provocation creates ire within us. It creates strong emotions within us. We're not talking about the fact that it is wrong to be angry. We're talking about the fact that it is wrong to lose control of our anger. And there is a very real distinction that we must make there. And God understands that in the midst of provocation, an individual's ire will be raised. That happened, in fact, with Jesus himself. Jesus, on a number of different occasions, became angry as he was provoked by the sin of others. One of the most common examples of this is Jesus was in the temple, and as he witnessed the money changers in the temple making merchandise of God's house, you'll remember that he was filled with indignation. We hear the phrase used in our day and time, righteous indignation, and that is also, almost always with a negative connotation, that a person who's filled with righteous indignation, they're conceived or perceived as being a hypocrite, perhaps, or a judgmental type. But indignation that is righteous is acceptable in understanding. Jesus had a reason to be angry. I do not think that Jesus lost his temper, however. What he did as a reasonable individual. He did because it was required. He acted boldly, but he did not act precipitously. He acted and reacted in a very strong way, but he was always in control of his emotions. And what we're talking about here is an individual who is not in control. He has lost his temper. And concerning that, you'll notice two things in this verse. One is that he stirs up strife, and two, that he abounds in transgression. And I think these are somewhat synonymous to one another. Basically, the fact is, when an individual loses temper, he causes a lot of problems. His temper leads him to do other things that are inappropriate. And anger indeed does lead to other sins. We need to recognize that that is the case. When a man loses his temper, he may say things that are inappropriate. He may, as a result of that, provoke others to anger as well and stir up strife. He may lash out, whether it be verbally or even physically, as a result of the loss of his temper. And what we want to affirm and establish, and it's a very important principle to familiarize ourselves with, is that, and again, do remember that the text of the book of Proverbs is advice from a man to his son. So it's in effect, how is it that you learn to conduct yourself as a man? And very many applications could be made to the ladies of the congregation as well. But here is a wise man telling his son how to be a man. And too often in our society, the idea of being manly has to do with such aggression and such a macho attitude. If I'm going to be a man, what that means is I'm going to take care of business. And that type of attitude is very, very prevalent. It's not being a man at all. It's being a child. Child is characterized by an inability to control emotions. It is much more mature, much more manly to be in control of your emotions at all times than to lash out. And in fact, that attitude that so many have, whether it be with regard to physical aggression, actual fighting, the ability to stand your ground and to cause another to back down, that is the definition of manliness is certainly wrong. And it's certainly inappropriate for Christians to have that attitude. But I don't know how many times I have seen that among Christian brothers who have a disagreement, to where they either through raised voices or through some kind of a filibuster make it their point in order to accomplish their goal of being in charge and of getting their way, of shouting down the other and expressing such a lack of control with regard to his emotions. And so the fury of an individual who is driven by anger because he has lost his temper is something that leads to many transgressions, many types of sins, some of them physical, some of them verbal, some of them with regard to things such as envy and wrath and jealousies. All of those things come or are spurred on by anger. So we need to be able to control our anger, control our temper to avoid those things. I want to stop here for just a moment and go to Matthew 5. You may want to keep your thumb, if you're turning in the book of Proverbs back and forth to the various passages, keep it there because we'll return to them in a moment. But I do want to just very quickly, as we've reached this point in our lesson, point out the fact that this is something of eternal consequence. Too often people, when they talk about their anger issues, they will talk about how they are genetically predisposed to it. They'll say, well, you know, I have a problem with my temper because that's the way my dad was and his dad before him. And we're just a volatile family. And they'll excuse their actions as a result of that. They'll talk about how severely provoked they were and feel justified in their reaction as they lose their temper because of the provocation. And it is often the case that people who have a problem controlling themselves in this way will in effect say it is something that is built into me, it's hardwired, there's nothing that I can do about it. And they will excuse their actions as being understandable or at the very least as being unchangeable because of the situations or because of the circumstance. And that's simply not so. God does not hold us accountable for things over which we have no control. But the Bible very clearly says that such anger is sinful. And in Matthew 5:22, Jesus said just that. Whoever is angry with his brother without a cause, and the idea there is without sufficient cause. Again, we understand righteous indignation as being acceptable with God, though we must control our sins. We're talking about the individual who loses his temper with others without sufficient provocation. Well, we are told there he shall be in danger of the judgment, and whoever says to his brother, Raka, which is an imprecatory statement where he is, in effect, cursing his brother or speaking evil of his brother, he shall be in danger of the council, and whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. So these are examples of rash words vented in anger. But you need to understand that that is not just an outgrowth of who you are, and it's not just understandable or excusable because of the circumstances. It is rather evidence that you have sinned in the sight of God. You'll notice that individuals who do that are in danger of judgment, are in danger of hell fire. And so while the passages that we're looking at in the wisdom literature are helpful to us, as we recognize the practicality of controlling our anger and that it avoids or helps us to avoid actions that are inappropriate, it helps us to get along with other individuals better, fact is, behind it all is a commandment of God to be angry and sin not, to not let the sun go down on our wrath. And we need to make sure that we avoid sin in this matter. Ephesians chapter 4 and verses 26 through 31. I miscounted. There are six from the book of Proverbs because I forgot this one from the New Testament as I was thinking about the numbers a few moments ago. But here in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26 and also in verse 31, along those same lines as we continue that point, the Apostle Paul states in verse 26, do not sin as you're angry. Be angry and do not sin. And again, as we alluded to a moment ago, do not let the sun go down on your wrath. And in verse 31 of the text, he says, let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. So this is not to be the natural condition of a man of God. While, again, provocation raises our ire, we should always be in control of our emotions. And those emotions should dissipate rapidly. In other words, God recognizes that there will be a response to provocation. God understands that there will be a response to provocation. You are not sinning if someone angers you by what they do. Some action that is inappropriate, some action that is harmful to you or your family. Those types of things will bring that reaction to you. But how do you act in that regard? And do you hold on to that? You'll notice the other sins that are mentioned in verse 31 of the text. Bitterness and wrath and evil speaking and then malice. All of these things are characteristic of an individual who does not let loose his anger, does not rid himself of the anger. It is something that festers within him. A bitter attitude comes as you harbor resentment. Malice is something that takes forethought. And an individual who acts in a malicious way, he's not acting out of anger. He's acting out of the harboring of anger. As he maintains and retains that anger at another, then he hatches a malicious scheme to engage in some activity that is harmful to the other. It takes forethought. It takes planning on his part. And an individual who lets go of his anger quickly, who does not let the sun go down on his wrath, will not be a malicious person. Being malicious takes time. Being malicious takes effort. It takes planning. And that should not be characteristic of the child of God. And so we need to ensure that anger does not dwell in our heart and fester into what we might refer to as a raging wrath, a wrath that leads to other types of sin. Now, with that in mind, going back to Proverbs, this time in the 22nd chapter, I want you to note some practical advice concerning those who are angry and how we as Christians should respond to them. And in verse 24, we are told not to make a friendship. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. Now, one particular commentator that I was reading on this text made the contention, and I'm not sure if it's entirely accurate in this regard, but there is an application that is true that we can make here, that there are two parts to this in verse 25. One is that if you are with an angry man, you will learn to be angry as well. And I think that there is some truth to that. We read from the Corinthian epistle this morning that evil companionship corrupts good morals. And there is that tendency if you are around individuals who are characteristically angry and act upon that anger, that there will be a corrupting influence upon you as a result of their evil. And you need to be careful. A little leaven. 1 Corinthians 5 tells us leaven's the whole lump. And as we maintain our affiliation with such individuals, we will learn to be like they are. We will be influenced to sin. That's something to be very, very careful about. But there is a second aspect of this that perhaps is indicated in the second part of verse 25, that it will set a snare for your soul. Understand this, that when an individual is around those who are angry, those who are losing their temper, and that sin is being engaged in, and that when an individual who is engaged in such activities, he is out of control, that's what we mean by losing your temper, don't be surprised if you are harmed. If you're around individuals who are like that, do not be surprised if as a result of such wrath, you are harmed by the fallout of such a temper. That is, that you can be damaged as well, whether it be by reputation, because you're associated with some individual, or at some point in time, that wrath and that anger, because of some provocation on your part, is turned toward you, because it certainly can happen. I remember when I was a younger parent, Debbie and I got it in our head that it would be good to have a dog for our kids. And that was when Josh and Kendra were relatively small, living there in Odessa, about 3 and 5 years old, 2 and 4 years old, somewhere along those lines. And it's good to have dogs. Many of you are dog lovers, and I understand that. I don't know that we've tried, well, we've tried a couple of times since, but we picked a bad dog for our kids. It was a chow. And I had heard about the temperamental nature of chows, but this is a beautiful dog, and we liked the dog just fine. But it snapped at the kids once. It actually tried to bite me on one occasion. Not that there was anything wrong, but there was just a small provocation. And he didn't like something I was doing, and he snapped at me, tried to bite me. And of course, if you look at, and you talk to people who know about dogs, they'll tell you don't get chows for children for the most part, because not because they can't be a wonderful and loving pet, but because they've got that hair trigger. And very quickly they can turn on you. And when he snapped at the kids, that was it. We got rid of the dog. We were concerned about it. Because you don't want a dog there who, at the slightest provocation, where the child may be petting him in one moment, the next moment comes away with a bite because of some provocation. You don't want to be around people like that either. You need to recognize that if you're around those kinds of individuals who are lashing out at others always, who have that anger and that bitterness in their heart, to understand that at some point in time, even though you may be the best buddy of such an individual, even though y'all may have been on good terms for a long period of time, if you, in some way, provoke that individual, that hair trigger may be tripped toward you. And as a result of that, you may be damaged as a result of his ungodliness. The Bible very clearly condemns anger, condemns those individuals who cause strife. And with regard to an individual who foments strife among God's people, he is to be turned away after admonishing him. If an individual does not repent of his sin, then we are to withdraw ourselves from that individual precisely because of the damage that such an ungodly person can do. So we need to be careful along those lines. Okay, in Proverbs chapter 17, we have another passage. In verse 27 of the text, Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 27. He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. A calm spirit. It's not surprising that one of the qualifications that is given concerning an elder, that he is to be slow to anger. It is important that one who is serving in the capacity of oversight in the congregation of God's people be able to control his temper, because in that way he is able to gain a full understanding and recognition of the situation or circumstance that may present itself to him. Elders have to make decisions. They have to discern. They have to get to the bottom of sometimes very thorny and difficult situations. They have to deal with provocation always. In fact, in Hebrews, the 13th chapter, you'll remember the admonition that is given concerning submitting yourself to those who are in a position of authority, those who must give account for their actions, and said that you were to obey them and to do so without causing grief to them, because that would be unprofitable for you. So when we look at that, the point is this. An elder's job is hard enough. And as they serve in the capacity of oversight, the responsibility that you have is to submit yourself to them and not cause them problems, not make their lives any harder through provoking them or through angry responses yourself or through sin that you might commit, because God's going to hold you accountable if you make an elder's life miserable by your actions and the way you conduct yourself. And I think that's a very important point to make. But on the other side, with regard to that, an elder is going to, as a nature, as a part of his work, there is the realization that some do not heed that, some are not as they should be, and an elder will be provoked often. And as such, he is to be careful, he is to be of a calm spirit. And in that way, he can get to the bottom of any particular issue. He will better be able to discern what is needful in those situations and circumstances. He doesn't speak out, but rather he listens. And one of the things that is noted in the text here, or the comment underneath the text, the wrathful man is often the very same individual who you can't get a word in edgewise with them, because they're going to be filibustering, they're going to be loud, and they're going to be boisterous, and they're going to be insistent that they be heard. And these same inability to control themselves and to be swift to hear and slow to speak are characteristic of the man who is wrathful and one who is easily angered. And so that's not conducive especially with regard to conflict. And by the way, brethren, from time to time, it's going to be among God's people that there will be disagreements, misunderstandings, doctrinal issues that need to be discussed. And when that is the case, there is the need for calmness and to be reasoned as we look at those things, that we can indeed have understanding. The individual who is able to calmly listen to another and respond in kind is the individual who will bring peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, and not those who foment strife. And then Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 32. Proverbs 16 and verse 32, where the writer, the wise man, says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." Now, I think a part of that text is indicating to us how much more difficult it is to control ourselves than it is to accomplish these great things. And so the wise man is indicating that when you compare an individual who has shown might and valor, perhaps he is a soldier or a warrior of some type, and shows his ability to dominate others, or perhaps you have an individual who has the ability through his generalship to lead troops and to take a city and to command an infantry. Well, that's something that is impressive. But what the wise man here is saying is that it's a more impressive feat. It shows more ability, more strength of character to be able to control yourself than to control an infantry or control a regiment or to be victorious in battle. Patience and an even temper is going to help us most often in life. Now, one of the things that that I've seen time and time again, and I could give you some specific examples in the high school setting as my children have grown up. But there's one particular one that comes to mind right now, but there are many that I've seen through the years of individuals, especially young men, who have that kind of a macho attitude that I'm not going to back down from anyone. I'm not going to allow anybody to disrespect me. And that includes not only their friends and those of their age, but also coaches and teachers and principals, and they just bow up and they're not going to allow anybody to tell them anything. And what they're trying to do is to assert their might. They're trying to assert their position. They're trying to say, nobody's going to mess with me. And what happens to them? Well, when you buck up against authority, you lose time and time again. If an individual bucks up against the policeman, he's going to go to jail. If he bucks up against the principal, a young man, he's going to be suspended. Or the coach, he's going to run wind sprints. Or he's going to lose his place on the team. And we have this idea that I'm not going to let anybody show me how I'm going to live my life, or no one's going to control me, when in fact, each and every one of us are controlled and must submit to some authority. And the first time that we understand that and recognize that, and instead of reacting against it violently or losing our temper as a result of it, and instead acting in a reasonable way, being patient and being even tempered about these kinds of things, we're going to be better off, because that's the way to get along in life. You look at the 13th chapter of the book of Romans and the first seven verses of that text, verse 13 verses of that text, it indicates the responsibility that we have to those who are in a position of authority in the civil government. And with regard to the laws of the land, and that one who executes that law said that he's not a terror to those who are doing good works, but those who do evil. And the purpose of those authorities is to control men, and those who are righteous, and those who are humble, and those who are patient, and those who are able to control themselves, they don't have anything to worry about with regard to the civil authorities. As the individual who does not control himself, is not able to show such restraint. But understand again that even as we make these applications in a practical way, that again, it's also required of us that we be controlling with regard to our temper in order for us to spend eternity in heaven. And then Proverbs 19:11. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 11. We are told the discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and his glory is to overlook a transgression. Now I want to make just a very quick application here with regard to us as Christians, and make the point that vengeance only works to make a bad situation worse. That when we allow ourselves to lose our temper, even again, if there is sufficient provocation to raise our ire, even if it is the case that we perhaps are in the right, that someone has wronged us, but we respond in kind or in some ungodly way, we lose our temper, that what happens is we make things worse. And I have seen time and again the wisdom of a patient man recognizing that it's often best when there is some misunderstanding, or he doesn't get his way, or there is something that is perhaps not to his liking, that he just keep his silence. We're not talking about overlooking sin and allowing sin to go without correction, but we are talking about the fact that conflicts arise almost every day among people, and conflicts are inevitable with regard to God's people as well. And sometimes it's better simply to suffer what we might perceive to be a wrong in silence, or to let something go and not to respond, not to be provoked, not to allow ourselves to be provoked in such a way as to respond and to cause strife. Patience there. Discretion. And discretion is sometimes called for. Do I react in this situation, or do I not react? What is it that I should do? What are my options, and which is the best option to take, rather than very quickly allowing ourselves from provocation to erupt and to lose our temper? In Ecclesiastes 7:9, and I think that's the final passage under consideration, Ecclesiastes 7:9, as we get out of one book of wisdom and into another, the wise man in verse 9 of that text says, "Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools." I was looking at some little comment to put at the bottom there, but I think it's pretty plain. I don't know that there is much more that needs to be said. In fact, anger is characteristic of haste. An individual who loses his temper, and you hear about it, even the phrases that we use, he has a hair trigger, he is easily provoked, he's quick to anger. That's the way it works. But if you can be careful and you can be slow in spirit to respond to provocation, then you will be much better off. Again, you'll notice anger rests in the bosom of fools, those who are foolish, those who act in a way that is folly. They do so often because of impulsiveness. And certainly the loss of temper is what leads to such impulsive action. And so as we draw our lesson to a close, we want to again emphasize that instead of being rash, the Bible instructs us to follow a different path. And I just want to again make a special plea, not because there's any specific application, but again it's something that we need to keep in mind from time to time as Christians. That among God's people from time to time there will be conflict that will arise. There will be the need for us to act in an even-handed way, to perhaps discuss differences that we might have, to listen to the other person and hear him out, to determine what is right and what is a proper course of action. We need to be careful to allow that to happen. Concentrate on listening and heeding what is said, honestly evaluating information before reacting quickly, impulsively, by becoming angry and losing our temper. I think that's what the writer James says in James chapter 1 and verse 19, when he said, "My beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to wrath or anger. The wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God." And so what we as Christians are to do is lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. Look there in verse 21 and contrast to those things that we are to receive and to do as those things that are to be avoided. In verse 19, we are to be slow to wrath. Wrath is inappropriate. Anger is inappropriate. But rather, instead of being wicked and have that aspect of wickedness a part of us, instead let's receive with meekness the implanted word. Let's listen. Let's be careful. Let's control ourselves. There's nowhere that is more important than in the church, but it certainly has its application in all aspects of our life. Husbands, you need to be careful with regard to the relationship you sustain with your wife. That you be slow to anger. Wives, the same. And while the masculine is used most often as we look at the scriptures, certainly the woman is under consideration as well. And in fact, in that same book of Proverbs, an angry woman is referred to on a number of occasions, and the sins that are prevalent when that anger is exhibited are things such as bitterness and gossip and backbiting. And so ladies can have the same problem. We think of men when we talk about anger, and we talk about fisticuffs. When we talk about women and we talk about anger, the first thing that comes to mind is a sharp tongue. But that can be every bit as damaging as physical involvement. And we need to be careful in all things. Wives, be careful with regard to your husbands that you do not lose your temper. Parents, be careful with regard to your children because they will provoke you, that you do not lose your temper with them. Be careful to listen to them. Be careful to not respond to the provocation, but instead to be reasonable in dealing with their disobedience and with the provocation that they raise from time to time. Children, you need to keep in mind the very same thing. It is the parent's place to instruct you, and there are times when as a result of that, you will become angry with your parents. The ire that we've referred to will be raised within you. Don't lose control, and do not lash out at your parents, because we are told as children that we're to obey our parents in the Lord, to listen to them and heed their words. It's not always an easy thing to do, but as you grow and as you mature, it is a sign of righteousness and godliness if you are able to control yourself and control your temper. An individual who's able to do that, a child who is able to do that, is showing a great deal of maturity in their lives. So we can make applications throughout, but this is the point. The control of temper is something that is very beneficial and practical in all the relationships that you sustain in your life. But most importantly, the control of temper is necessary to the saving of your soul. God is not going to allow in heaven those who foment strife and who lose control of their emotions. We must be temperate in all things. That is what God requires of us. We're going to offer an invitation at this time, not knowing the hearts of any. Maybe that you're here and you need to respond to that call. If you're not a child of God but desire to become one today, we offer the opportunity to you to express such intentions, to note that you have repented of sins that you've committed in your life and have determined to serve God acceptably, to confess that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and be baptized tonight to have your sins washed away. We can assist you in that, or if there is anyone here, it may be that they have lost their temper, they have exhibited anger and feel a need to change. If you want our prayers, we'll assist you in what way we can. If you need to confess, then we will receive your confession. But if there is that need, would you come while together we stand, while we sing?